Okay, good evening, everybody. And it's nice to see all of the commissioners here and our friends in the audience, so to speak. I was going to say congregation, but this is the wrong pew. Welcome in from the cold and the wind. And so I call this March 22nd meeting of the Suffolk County Human Rights Commission to order. And we'll go around just to, I mean, we have the name placards, but I guess just to be more personal. So we'll start off with Gus down there. Oh, Guy, tonight's meeting, actually all of our meetings now are being recorded. So that means you have to use the microphone, otherwise the little teeny tape recorder that's over there will not hear you. And then also later on with the speakers, you'll come to the table, whatever. Okay.
Sorry, Gus Mantilla, I chair the Health Committee.
Luis Valenzuela.
Mark Epstein.
Bina Kotari.
Dr. Hafiz Rahman.
Carolyn Peabody.
Leon Walker Belgrave.
Rabbi Steve Moss.
Harry Marr.
Dawn Lott.
Angie Campagna.
And I'm Luis Rodriguez.
And we'll get to know those of you who wish to introduce yourselves later on. We do need to have an approval of last month's February 22nd of our meeting, of our minutes rather.
Move to approve.
A second. All in favor? Those who can vote? Any opposed? Okay, passed. As far as my report, a chairman's report, there's always something and even more going on, to say the least, that we should always be as a caring community of concerned citizens should be concerned about. However, I have nothing specific to mention. As some of you do know, the Suffolk County's Anti-Bias Task Force is a subcommittee of our Human Rights Commission now, and we were going to have a meeting of the representatives of actually all of the 9 task forces next week, but we had to change that date. We haven't come up with another one. Did you get the email for that? Dawn, did you send that out? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but maybe send, until we work that out, maybe send something out, because otherwise people will be, I don't know, something got confused. But anyway, it's off for next week. Yeah, because I can't make it. And Reverend Joanne didn't want to do this by herself. Not because she couldn't, but she felt the two of us should be there. Okay, so take that off of your calendar, please. So, Dawn, we're up to your report.
Good evening, everyone. So in your folders, there should be a copy of my executive director's report. And briefly to go over the statistics for February 2017. The commission handled 221 inquiries. We opened 9 cases, including 4 employment cases, 1 housing case, 1 public accommodation case, and 1 credit case. I'm passing around the police reports from the hate crimes unit that we've received since our last meeting. And to provide you with just a legislative update, on February 28th, I appeared before the legislature with regard to a proposed bill which was intended to change the standard for the admission of evidence during a hearing before the Suffolk County Human Rights Commission, which was unanimously approved. And so basically what that bill allowed us to do is to have our rules of procedure and our laws coincide. And so we now, we had been following a relaxed standard, but the bill was basically just to make those two, the code and the rules of practice, coincide with one another. And what I have here are copies of the resolutions that were passed during our last meeting. So if anyone is interested, they're here. And those resolutions, for those who were not here, one of the resolutions was in support of the Jewish community. The other one was in support of the DACA program. And the final one was in support of the bathroom protections for transgender students. With regard to community outreach, educational events, and advisory committees, on February 26th, I did attend the Interfaith Prayer Service for Unity Rally in America, and that was hosted by Rabbi Morse's Synagogue in Oakdale. On March 8th, I did participate in the Know Your Rights Fair Housing Seminar, which was sponsored by the New York State Division of Human Rights and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And upcoming events and presentations on April 2nd, I will be before it's called the AVRASA Long Island meeting, and that's going to be at Hofstra University, and I will be speaking about what the commission does and providing information with regard to an overview of the Human Rights Commission, but with regard to disabilities as well. And on April 10th, my office will be doing a presentation for the Suffolk County Police Cadets. And on May 17th, as you all know, we have our awards dinner, which is going to be held at Villa Lombardi's at 6:30 to 9:30. And that concludes my report.
Any comments or questions to Dawn? I want to compliment Dawn on writing such beautiful, if I may use that word, resolutions. They were great. Yeah, really. Yeah. Yes, I was very impressed. Yes, I was very impressed. Thank you, Dawn. That was wonderful. Okay, committee reports. So, Gus, if you want to give the update and I guess to announce who was chosen tonight to be the award recipients, too. I'm working it out. Oh, I see. You want to do it that way? Okay.
Sorry about that. The event will be one of, I think, multiple events that we've had like this in the past, picking on several areas, either volunteerism, community, education, professional services, that we honor people in the community who have done many good things. The event will be once every other year, as we've planned it out. It's a huge amount of work, and Dawn, again, shoulders most of it. We have made an initial selection of recipients for those awards. We'll announce them when we get confirmation that those individuals are accepting. We will have a keynote speaker also who will just dazzle everybody, but we want to make sure we have confirmation on that. The event is going to be on the 17th of May, and it'll be a nice event. I think that you're all welcome to come.
Okay, thank you, Gus.
Can I?
Your committee? What?
Can I make my request to the commission members now? Okay. So as has been past practice, I'm requesting that all commission members prepay or pay for their tickets tonight if possible. The cost of the tickets is $65, and the reason for the request is to help with the event and the awards and all of the other items that go into planning the event. So $65 cash, please. Thank you. Cash?
No credit cards.
Absolutely, Dr. Peabody.
Okay, thank you, Dawn, for that request. Dawn will be at the door on the way out.
And the other door
will be locked. So, Carolyn, did you want to talk about the Justice Committee?
So I share the chairpersonship with Mark and Luis, and I sent out a doodle to the members of the Justice Committee to schedule a meeting sometime over the next 2 weeks to prepare for their meeting with Commissioner Cini, which is coming up at our next commission meeting. Yeah, hopefully if it's not rescheduled again.
Right. And I've had, over the last couple of weeks, quite a few...
Yeah, can I just make another... This is... This isn't exactly a committee report. This, however, I think one of the things at some point I'd like to talk about is the is our recommendation that we meet with the sheriff also around, especially around the fact that the sheriff has decided to cooperate with ICE with the federal government, and then secondly that while the police chiefs, because I'm pretty much focused on the East End, the police chiefs have all agreed not to cooperate with ICE. It misrepresents reality, because while they may not be participating in raids with ICE, if someone is arrested for for the most minor thing, or if they're arrested and they are not in fact found guilty, but they have already been arrested and fingerprinted, those fingerprints are sent immediately to the feds. And so they therefore are, ICE is immediately notified that someone has been arrested. And I'm right now in the middle of dealing with trying to get a young 21-year-old out of a deportation proceedings for a misdemeanor that he paid fine for. So I would say that's something that we need to sort of address. It seems like a problematic that our police chiefs and departments are, you know, inadvertently or advertently participating in rounding up people who are not falling into the category of severe criminals. As a human rights issue, I think that's problematic.
I did, because some people have asked me regarding the ICE office at the sheriff's, at the prison. And I did discover that the ICE office at the jail was there way before this current administration in Washington. So it's not that makes any better or worse, but I'm just stating that the fact is it's been there for quite some time already. Yeah.
ICE has been there since 2006.
Right.
So it really should not come as any surprise to anyone.
Yeah. But some people came to me and they thought it was a product of the new administration in Washington, and it's not.
So if I can just add, I was in a meeting with, the meeting was actually called by the Amistad Black Bar Association and the Long Island Hispanic Bar Association, and the meeting included the sheriff, as well as his undersheriff, Key House. And there was a lot of discussion, which I'm not going to get into tonight, but at the end of that meeting, he did agree to appear before any group, because his perception was that there was a misunderstanding in the process, what the sheriff's jurisdiction is versus what the police's jurisdiction is and what ICE is doing. And so while he declined to speak about the practices of ICE, he did give a clear view of what they do once someone is stopped, undocumented, once they're stopped, what the procedure is. And I think part of the solution is for people to really understand what the process is. But that being said, he did say that he would be willing, and if the commission is interested, what I would try to do is see if he would be available on April 22nd, so that both he and the commissioner perhaps could attend, because some of his responses were, well, I don't know, you would have to speak to the police commissioner. So if they were both here in the room, then perhaps we could address the questions at that time.
I think that's a jolly good idea.
Excuse me. About 2 weeks ago, I sat down with a couple of members of other organizations, and we sat down with Commissioner Cini. Now, you know, out of this meeting, you know, they claimed that they weren't going to honor these detainers anymore. However, they would honor an administrative warrant, which is basically the same thing. So he alleges that he was having, he mentioned it to the county attorney because an administrative warrant doesn't need any probable cause. However, it's the same as a detainer. So when you go in, they're not going to let you go. And also mentioned that, you know, because there was a lot of things going on that day that perhaps we can come up with certain crimes that they would not send the fingerprinting. But then it's like, which crimes do you not, you know, send out?
But just for a point of clarification, the fingerprints are going to be sent automatically, whether you're a citizen, an immigrant. As soon as you get arrested and you get booked, the fingerprints are sent. The point of intervention would be in honoring the detainer request. There are three different types of detainer requests. What Sheriff DeMarco is doing is acting as if those detainers are in fact probable cause. He met with the county attorney, who said that yes, you can honor the detainers and you will not be sued. All right, but if you look at the detainers, the top of each one of those detainers states that it's voluntary, but under that title, it looks like you have no option but to cooperate. But the point is that it's still a voluntary request, which they do not have to honor.
Who's doing the request, Luis? I don't know the they.
So the they is ICE.
So they're the detainer. ICE sends, that's the detainer, the ICE.
Sends a detainer request. There's three of them. One is a notification, one is detention, and one is labeled X. It's a catch-all, right, for a whole bunch of others. But it's a detainer that's a dragnet, right? And it catches anyone who is an immigrant. And they can request whomever they want to be detained. The sheriff this summer decided to change. And based on a case that happened in Nassau County, which is state court, immigration is federal. And they're basing their interpretation of what probable cause is based on a state case out of Nassau County. But irrespective of that, over the last 3 years, the sheriff had turned over to ICE about 800 individuals. All right, so at the same time that he was saying that he wasn't cooperating, he was, in fact, transferring people over to ICE's custody. So I think for us, we need to have a meeting before we meet with them and have a serious discussion on the issues.
Definitely.
You know,
perhaps also wise to have someone from a group that has immigration lawyers that could help us distinguish and answer any questions that we might have.
You know, before I did, you know, because that's not all that he said. He also said something which is positive, you know, at that meeting. He said that he would try to, you know, I know Nassau County, we do it. We, and Nassau County has a committee that helps victims of crimes that they help them process what the U visa to certify in those types of cases. Suffolk doesn't have it, so he said he will look into and hoping to establish something like that. So out of everything that's bad, he made some positive, you know, moves. So I can't say everything was bad. So I have to tell you what happened also. But there is a lot of things that have to be done, you know, because there's a lot of people who are getting to trouble over tickets. They get suspended. Now they get pulled over for some reason. They didn't answer it. Now you have a crime. So that makes them, if they want, they can arrest them, take them in. Then they get fingerprinted. They can send that notice to find out whether he's legal or not. So the whole issue was, when is that triggered? And that was really what was going on that night. But you know, everything is triggered. You know, that's the issue.
You know, this detainer business has nothing to do with your status, whether you're documented or not, right? You could be a legal permanent resident and still be deported. And in fact, a lot of the people who are being caught up are people who have legal status, who have committed a crime in the past and have, you know, paid their due to society, and they're still being caught up. It really has nothing to do with your status, although it's put out there as if they're going after undocumented immigrants. But it's a wide net that's being cast, and has a tremendous impact on the communities that are affected.
Okay, well, we should put a lot of thought into our next meeting, but I have a feeling it's not going to be the last one in terms of this. I've been receiving numerous calls from various advocate agencies and organizations, as well as individuals, because there's a tremendous amount of confusion out there in the streets as to what this department's doing, not doing, how it's treating this and that, the other thing. I've said to them, at next month's meeting, people sitting in the public section cannot ask the commissioner questions, because it's not an open hearing for the commissioner to receive questions from them. However, he can receive questions from us. That's the way our meetings run. So I said to any organization or person who has a question, send it to me, and I will further to Carolyn for the meeting next month. So we can become the vehicle for their questions, and we'll see how it goes. So anyway, this is obviously a very important thing that's going on right now, and I know for many people in the community, this is very, very frightening situation, frightening times, and if we can, in some fashion or another, have some of those questions answered. But as Luis just pointed out, you could sit at a whole meeting and there's still questions that are not answered. So it's interesting. So anyway, that's next month's meeting. So make sure everyone's here. Everyone else is welcome. Okay. Any other committee reports at this time? Health? Anything new? Doctors? Okay. Yes. And I thank all the committees for all the work they put into this, and obviously thoughts and concerns. Okay, don't forget to pay Dawn, please, for paying every couple of minutes. So it's subliminal. I welcome the Housing for All Coalition, and you can all come up. It doesn't matter, whatever you want to do. I have here that Sharon Mullen and Lucas Sanchez and Ian Wilder wanted to speak. I don't know if the other persons. And I welcome everyone, but most particularly, it is lovely to see Elaine Gross, founder, director, force behind, with a wonderful board of directors, of course, to Race of Racism. So welcome, Elaine. Nice to see you. Here you are. So welcome everyone. Again, the way you have to do this, if you've never done it before, I don't know if your microphone stays on without pressing it, but if not, you have to keep your finger on the button. Okay, thanks. Welcome, everybody.
And could I just add that in everyone's folder, there is a printout of the Housing Coalition and all of the organizations that comprise the Housing Coalition, so you can take a look at that.
Good evening, Rabbi Moss, members of the Suffolk County Human Rights Commission, and Executive Director Lott. My name is Dr. Sharon Mullen, and I am the Fair Housing Education Coordinator at the Long Island Housing Partnership and a member of the Housing for All Coalition. 2 weeks ago, I sent Ms. Lott a listing of the Housing for All Coalition members with a brief agency profile for each member. I actually have additional copies if you need any extras. The coalition is happy to have this opportunity to introduce its members. They are Erase Racism, Hofstra Law Community and Economic Development Clinic, Long Island Housing Partnership, Long Island Housing Services, Make the Road New York, Nassau Suffolk Law Services Committee, and New York Communities for Change. I want to begin by thanking Ms. Lott for supporting the Long Island Housing Partnership's Fair Housing Conferences. She attended last October's Fair Housing Rights for People with Psychiatric Disabilities Conference, and also the Fair Housing Issues Affecting the LGBT Community Conference at Toro Law School. I also want to compliment Ms. Lott for her presentation at the New York State Division of Human Rights Fair Housing Seminar on March 8th at Toro Law Center. While the seminar was informative and Dawn gave a great presentation, it was really very unfortunate that it was so poorly attended. With that in mind, I'd like to suggest to the Suffolk County Human Rights Commission to call upon the Housing for All Coalition and its members to assist with outreach and networking as you plan educational events. Together we can enhance community participation at educational events, particularly at events that provide consumers, realtors, landlords, and property managers with information related to the county's lawful source of income protection. As you may know, the coalition is an outgrowth of community agencies coming together to support the inclusion of source of income protections into the Suffolk County Human Rights Law. When the amended law became effective in January 2015, Long Island Housing Partnership held an educational conference with the Long Island Board of Realtors to provide realtors and consumers with fair housing training and the recent updates to the Suffolk County Human Rights Law. The LA Long Island Housing Partnership was pleased to have Rob Moss and the former executive director, Jennifer Blasky, make presentations. More than 150 people attended the conference. Last week, Ms. Lott mentioned the Housing for All Coalition's interest in a statewide source of income campaign, and perhaps we could explore that at a future meeting. However, this evening, the coalition wanted to introduce itself, offer its outreach efforts, and demonstrate its willingness to assist the Suffolk County Human Rights Commission in its mission to work toward the elimination of bias and discrimination. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you, Sharon, for your comments. Good evening, everyone. My name is Luca Sanchez, and I am the Long Island Director for New York Communities for Change and a member of the Housing for All Coalition. I wanted to talk to you tonight about how the Housing for All Coalition can work in partnership with the Human Rights Commission to make sure that Suffolk residents, particularly those most affected by source of income discrimination, are aware of the protections they have under the Suffolk County Human Rights Law. I would like to second Sharon's suggestion that the Suffolk County Human Rights Commission call upon the Housing for All Coalition and its members to assist with outreach and networking as you plan educational events. NYCC and Make the Road, in particular, reside in communities such as Brentwood, Central Islip, Wyandanch, Gordon Heights, and our ally organizations such as Sepa Mujer organize similar communities in Riverhead and Southampton. We believe that our experience knocking on doors and engaging low and moderate income communities, organizing chapter meetings, workshops, and forums can be helpful to the commission. At the commission's next educational event, coalition members can work to have the most affected people in the community get the information they need regarding their rights and the resources available should those rights be violated. Thank you.
Let's see if I'm doing this right. Okay. Good evening, all. Yeah, well, that's one thing, right? I'm fortunate to have two such wonderful people speak before me, and they've covered so much ground. I, too, want to say good evening to Rabbi Moss, members of the Human Rights Commission, and, of course, Executive Director Lott. My name is Ian Wilder. I'm also here as a representative of the Housing for All Coalition. I'm Deputy Director of Long Island Housing Services, a fair housing civil rights organization that was first founded in 1969. I wanted to say that the Suffolk County Human Rights Commission is of special interest to our executive director, Michelle Sant'Antonio. She actually worked for the commission as an investigator for 13 and a half years from 1977 to 1990. So she asked me to specially mention that and to give her regards. As I'm sure you're also aware, our agency, Long Island Housing Services, has a long-standing relationship with the commission. In the past, we've trained some of the commission staff on fair housing and as testers. As you know, Long Island Housing Services also actively works to enforce federal, state, and county fair housing laws. And I actually made a note based on the discussion tonight, and I'm sure you're all aware, that national origin is a basis that can be questioned for discrimination in housing. So if someone is questioned, if someone's questioned based on their, or denied housing, sorry, based on their national origin, which is an issue that's come up with all this increased focus on where people are from improperly, they should definitely speak with the commission or an organization like ours in order to enforce their rights in this country. That's what happens when I go off my notes. Back to my notes. We have been utilizing Suffolk County human rights laws in cases where we have found sufficient evidence to pursue enforcement. As an attorney, maybe it is not a coincidence that I get the technical part of the presentation tonight. All the organizations in the Housing for All Coalition support the mission of the Suffolk County Human Rights Commission, and we are looking to partner with you to help with your good work. I believe that the more information we share, the stronger we are, especially in these trying times. And I noted the article that I got to scan quickly that was handed out. I think about the Three Faith event that was held and that it was mentioned in Newsday. I think it's very important the more that we can get out there, the more information we can put in people's hands and let them know what their rights are and what's being done currently and what's available to them is very important. I also believe that it's in the best interest to make sure that there are no questions about how we do our work that distracts from the importance of the work itself. We've seen much too much of that done with civil rights organizations where they are distracted from doing their work by people questioning how they do their work, especially when it's little details. Toward that end, I go to being the attorney. I believe the proceedings of the commission can be fine-tuned a little bit to meet the current legal expectations. The concerns I'm mentioning have been previously raised in a letter to the commission and to the prior commissioner. I thought it would be helpful to take a minute to discuss them. Section 106 of the Open Meetings Laws requires that the minutes of each commission meeting be taken and be made available within 2 weeks. Section 103E requires those minutes, among other agency records, be available on the agency website. Section 103E also requires that any documents being discussed at the meeting, in addition to the agenda, including a minutes, resolutions, obviously if they're printed, not if they're being written as you discussed, like was wonderfully done at last meeting, and statistics be made available to the public at the meeting. A note on the agenda, the recently adopted consent agenda could be problematic because since consensus is required for consent items, consensus has to be gotten by having a vote first. So you should look carefully about what's being put on the consent agenda. And if that's something that requires a vote, obviously that vote had to have been done publicly first. I would add that it would be helpful to have at each meeting a written breakdown of the complaints by protected class and subject matter. Obviously not details that could not be disclosed, but some of the discussion that was had tonight was useful in terms of what the statistics are. I realize that the commission's annual report summarizes these numbers, though the last one I could find on the website was 2014. It would be helpful to have these numbers in a printed form in a more timely manner at the meetings. Thank you all for your time. I appreciate it.
Any questions, comments? Just to say thank you for your comments and words. And those who are back there, Andrew or Elaine, is anyone else going to speak? Or no? Okay, you're just here to look good. You do. Okay.
I have a question. Well, thank you. Thank you for your holding us and reminding us that we have to make sure that information is shared. I have a question that's kind of off that subject, though, and that is if you can sort of tell us what you anticipate in terms of impact, the impact of changes at the federal level that are being discussed and how that might impact our ability to enforce and ensure that discrimination isn't in housing isn't run rampant.
Well, obviously, in terms of the commission, it doesn't affect you because you're operating under county law. In terms of the federal government, we've seen what's in the
like the cuts to the civil
the cuts to HUD. It's more a question of what's going to be done administratively. We've seen, and this is just my opinion. I haven't particularly seen they put a hold on anything going forward. There are things such as the new affirmatively furthering fair housing regulation that was put in to actually make the 1968 law work finally, that is just being phased in. Things like that that are being phased in are going to be a problem if cuts are made. Obviously, any type of enforcement that's being done through HUD, if staff cuts are made, are going to be a problem. The law is what it is, and the law has existed since 1968 through administrations with various different philosophies. In fact, there have been positive changes to the laws, for instance, during the Reagan administration. So we've been careful, and it was very interesting because my executive director was interviewed by the New York Times, but the article never went in. They interviewed fair housing organizations from all around the state. And we were careful to say, you know, this is what the rhetoric is, but this is what the record is since the 1968 law and prior laws. I mean, there are laws going back to post-Civil War. At the moment, I'm not expecting problems in the laws to be fixed or new positive legislation to go through. But to pass something to take back what is, we haven't seen anything like that. So we're taking somewhat of a wait-and-see attitude, but being prepared. It's very difficult at this point. I mean, the budget that was put out was very broad. Obviously, it would cut deeply into enforcement. It would possibly cut into funding for programs like ours. We have an enforcement program that's funded through HUD grants. It's a three-year program, but the funding is worded that Congress has to pass the funding once every year over the 3 years. That could be impacted, but from the current large legislative piece we see going through Congress, agreement's not as easy as people think. So we're planning, as for my agency, we're planning for the future, but we're not making assumptions. We're acting on when we have solid information. And in terms of the work that we're doing, we have a contract, and we're doing the enforcement work. We're doing the outreach. We have not stopped doing our work, and we are trying to reach out to any communities that we can that feel any additional needs under these times because, as we all know, hate crimes has increased, and that sometimes encourages people to discriminate. I hope that helps.
There are two bills that are circulating, one in the House and one in the Senate, to reject the new language and guidance for affirmatively furthering fair housing. So that, and there's also language in that to remove HUD as part of that project, created a whole geospatial database of information and mapping as to where people lived so that you could identify areas that were highly segregated. And they want to actually remove that from HUD's website and no longer make that available to people. So there are a number of things that are being proposed. And I think probably what it'll be is to starve the beast, you know, and the same thing probably with the Department of Justice, that it will be underfunded so that there will be a limited amount of cases that they could take on.
I'm noticing here the Housing for All Coalition, there are seven different organizations that are agencies that are part of it, and obviously you represent three of them. What does the coalition do as a coalition?
Well, the coalition originally came together to support source of income legislation.
Right.
And then we decided that we would stay together and pursue, you know, and continue on with source of income to make sure that the education was done and that community members really understood what their rights were. We've also explored working on other advocacy issues that would be of concern, you know, to agency members, since we are all very much concerned about affordable housing and access to housing for people throughout the county.
And as mentioned before, New York State does not have a source of income law, though the surrounding states do, which would be, I think, surprising to most people, considered that New York is considered such a liberal state. It's been vetoed in the past, so that has been, I think, an issue in common that we talked about exploring in the future.
I noticed that neither the Suffolk County nor Nassau County, I'm sorry, human rights commissions are a part of the coalition. Is there a reason for that? Neither Nassau nor Suffolk County Human Rights Commissions are a part of this coalition, although both of us work in the area of housing. So is there a reason for that?
The coalition has been set up, I think, just pretty much for nonprofits.
That's what I was kind of asking.
So, I mean, there are any number of housing agencies. I mean, once you talk about housing, you can talk about the CDAs and a number of governmental bodies.
Right.
But just the way this coalition's been designed, and there are other coalitions. For instance, out of St. Joseph's, there's the Attainable Homes Institute, which has crossed, and then also out of Nassau County, Mike Robb's set up a coalition to a Long Island Home Starts in order to increase the building of affordable housing by bringing together the expertise of all stakeholders and then applying that to communities where there's been a problem, in order to bring in that expertise, because there is agreement between a lot of governmental bodies, organizations such as ours, and actually a lot of builders who want to build affordable housing and have met various forms of resistance. And the idea was to bring together prior expertise in order to help overcome that, because as you all know, we have a shortage of housing and a shortage of affordable housing and a shortage of really affordable housing.
Yeah. And also what one community defines as affordable is not really affordable. In the Dawn and I attended an intent-biased task force meeting, I think it was in Southampton. Yeah. And there was a discussion about what affordable housing is in Southampton. A very interesting discussion. Eye-opener, that's for sure. Well, thank you for attending tonight, for sharing with us, for reminding us, and we're all part of just different spokes in the same hub here, that we care about the quality of life of everyone in our communities. So thank you very much, and we'll further discussion, further programming, sharing, which is always very important, and all the other things were brought up tonight by you and others as well. So thank you, everybody. Thanks. Stay warm. Moving along in our agenda. Any old business that we haven't discussed already? Any new business that you would like to discuss? Dina, did you have something you wanted to talk about? Women's program?
There is a new temple in Melville, and 26th, which is Sunday, we have a woman's sort of like a meet and greet. It's start 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Certainly, that's the brand new temple, and I invite every woman to attend. Men's are welcome also, but they cannot come and attend the meeting. Certainly, they can, you know, visit the temple, and there will be luncheon also. So everyone is welcome. And I did send an email to Dawn, so maybe you can just forward to everybody. Thank you.
Okay, anything else?
This Sunday, unfortunately, the same day, we're holding a Unity Town Hall at the Hilton Garden Inn in Riverhead. It's a joint effort of the North Fork and Riverhead to bring together activists, vulnerable members of vulnerable populations, and people who are interested in getting involved and bringing people together to create a sense of solidarity and begin working together.
Okay.
That's from 3 to 5.
Okay, good. Well, since it's between this meeting and the next one, I do wish everyone a very happy Easter and happy Passover. And let us also offer a prayer for those whose lives were taken today in London. And we pray for those who are injured for a strong and a good recovery. Amen. So everyone, do I get a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Any second? Dion? All in favor? Thanks, everyone. Stay warm. See you next month, if not before.